having 4 years to build a product, to fix a product, to build a team, to see if it's going to work, and sometimes it all falls apart. That was kind of some of my experience too. It was, I don't want the whole success of the business to be dependent on the sales team, the marketing team, picking the wrong market strategy at the wrong time. I have a pretty strong conviction that people are going to be building software products for a while. And what I actually see is even bigger companies are starting to think of their own internal IT initiatives as products and not as IT.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about product development, and we're going to be talking with Rob Kischuk. Great hockey name, as you told me, Rob. And I wanted to have this conversation because I kind of have a knack for demystifying things that are mystical or uncomplicating things that are complicated or showing that there's passion behind things where people don't necessarily think of like product development all the times as like, oh, cool, let's like incorporate all this passion into our product development. So, people just think about coding. So That's why I wanted to have this conversation with Rob Kischuk, founder and CEO of Bellwood Labs. So Rob, welcome to the show. How's your day going?
It's going great. Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here. Yeah,
absolutely. And you guys have a podcast as well. Tell us, before we dive in, tell us a little bit about the podcast you have.
Sure. We have the Marketing Agency Leadership Podcast. We talk to CEOs, founders, owners, partners of independent digital marketing firms, product development firms, mostly anyone in kind of the services business, kind of near marketing.
Love it. I'm sure that's a lot of fun. And I also could imagine you probably get a lot of ideas for your own business from that as well.
Yes, I get the privilege of grabbing some really smart people who have built some really great businesses, and I get to ask them whatever I want for 30 minutes. So yeah, I like the plan.
Yeah, that's great. Well, so you lead the team at Bellwood Labs, which is a product development agency in Atlanta area. I'll just can't count that whole big metro area as Atlanta. But tell me more, tell our audience a little bit more about Bellwood and kind of what you think helps you to stand out in the market.
Yeah, we are really focused on becoming and being known as the best partner to build and scale a software product, an app, or a platform. And that encompasses a few different focuses. Some of it's about being good at building a product. Some of that has elements of scale that are necessary in it. But where it all comes from for me is I have been involved in building software products my whole career. Half the time when I've come into a new role, maybe more than half the time, as a CTO, as a engineering manager, something is extremely broken. And usually the idea of what needs to exist in the world and the customers it's going to serve is really compelling and something that should exist in the world, and I want it to exist in the world. And I've just seen it fail so many times that because I've had a knack, I think, for talking to business owners and business leaders for what they want to exist and helping them get it, and a knack for, as a software developer, talking to software developers, creating a healthy work environment for them that helps build the product they want built. I think it's that combination of building the trust and execution that's where we want to live and keep growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you mentioned a lot of things in there that imply that you're thinking about this in a more integrated and in a more like human way than just, okay, you have a product, let's write the code and let's ship that product. Like, how are you maybe making that process more personal or more having more like life into the process that to the non-developer, most people look at is like, oh yeah, you have an idea, you find a coder and that coder builds your product and you put it on the app store.
Right. I do think that some of that starts with the type of software developer that we recruit. If it's a developer that doesn't ever want to talk to clients, then it's probably not a fit for us either. When we get down to core values, you know, one of our core values is that we succeed through empathy, and that's empathy for one another. That's empathy for the client. And if someone can't engage and actually try and sit in the shoes of, we had a founder who we were building a financial technology product for, and the first $50,000 was on his credit card. And he was not working at that time, and his wife was working. And when you get and you think about all the family dynamics of that, the pressure, it helps you understand where they're coming from. But when you're engaged with what they're actually trying to accomplish, we lean much more towards a consulting firm because we come with a consulting mindset. And we want to work with clients who say that they want us to bring ideas to the table. And so we've had clients tell us we're not order takers, and we thrive when clients are looking for a partner who's not an order taker, because a lot of software development, if you're very prescriptive and you say you want A, B, C, D, E, F features built, and you build all of those, you'll probably spend, you know, it's kind of a Pareto principle. You'll spend 80% of your time on 20% of the features. And if that's what you really want, and that's the meat and the bones of the product, then you certainly want to do that. If it's something where you share it with the client, they say, oh, I didn't realize that was going to be 80% of the work. We can really get to what they want a lot quicker and save some of the expensive sizzle for later. Mm-hmm. And it's consultative, right? It's how do we get to this right thing together?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's huge, because you know, I've had some ideas over the years in my business career, right? And I've also had times where I've worked with clients where we've, you know, they've had an idea for a product or for a software. And I feel like oftentimes people don't know the right questions to ask. And so it takes that consultative relationship for someone like you to maybe be able to guide a business on, here's the questions you should be asking along this journey. So yeah. I've definitely have seen that. I would imagine too, that in your position, you maybe help people realize that their idea is not one worth investing a bunch of time and money into. Do you run across that?
I think what I run into most often, and this is one of the things that's kind of fun to do, is helping someone realize when they don't need to build a product yet is a really enjoyable thing to do. And it also, it does the right thing for them instead of selling something you could sell them. And it lends a lot of credibility. It's credible to me when someone who could sell me something doesn't try because the right thing for me is something else and something better. So what we've seen with that in particular, we had someone, an entrepreneur that came to me, they had a main business that's doing well. They have another product they want to exist. We talked through what she was trying to do. And it turns out the best way to validate the idea through the next phase was a Google form. And sending that Google form to some people and having them fill out what they wanted and needed. And then she was behind the scenes going to iterate on some assumptions and try and match these people to their need and then reach it back out to them. And we've had a conversation right now with an influencer marketing agency that influencer marketing is very complicated. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of processes, and they're gluing it all together with people, but they're still iterating on the process. And so even when we're going through our kind of discovery process on a new project, we talk a lot about how words and processes and the steps to do things are cheap when they're glued together by people. And they're expensive when you put them in code and you need to change them again. So if a process isn't dialed in, very wonderful to do it manually until you know with certainty what you want to do. And then that there's a value to enshrine that into code and pixels on a screen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear your perspective on maybe some of our listeners that they have ideas or they're, you know, they have product ideas that they know would change the world, and they know everybody would think be amazing, but they haven't tested them. They're ideas in their head. Like, what are maybe some of the first questions people should be asking or some of the first steps people should be taking if they have a product or an idea that they're wanting to bring to life?
Yeah. There are some very good books and writings out there on kind of this customer discovery process. I'm not a great expert on that. I tell clients to their faces, I said, I really can't tell you whether something is a good idea or not, because you know, number one, there's a lot of things that I don't know in the world. I don't know if, you know, TikTok for cats is just for cat videos is a good idea or not. Our perspective is, first of all, if we can help somebody validate it a little bit ahead of time, great. They might start a YouTube channel of cat videos and, you know, see how they can. It may actually be that the test is their ability to build an audience, because most of these things, the idea is one piece of it. Iterating and executing is the much bigger question of whether the business is going to thrive. Is there are, you know, tons of people building sports betting things, building different delivery applications, different gig economy applications. And I don't think it's rarely about the best product from an objective perspective. There's a whole lot of execution that sits on top of that. So anything someone can do, when I was in the startup accelerator with the concept that was the genesis of our company, we started with a product, not with a consultancy. They talked a lot about getting outside of the building. How do you get outside? Like, don't keep writing code. Don't keep building features. Don't keep paying people to do those things. Go find somebody with a problem, and ideally find somebody with a problem that is so bad they will pay you to solve it. And you could be solving it. It kind of goes back to, you could be solving it with, you know, duct tape and 2x4s. You could be solving it with a keyboard, and you could be solving it with somebody on Fiverr or Upwork until you know what the right thing is to do to actually formalize it into a product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me more about that story for you. What was that original problem that you, what was the original problem that you wanted to solve? And it sounds like there was maybe some evolution with, you thought you were starting this and then you ended up turning into this.
Yeah, I actually tried three different evolutions of product before surrendering and realizing how to really use what I was most strong at helping the market with. So I came from a background of building teams to build and scale software products, which you'll notice is what we do now as a business. But from that, I had last worked in kids gaming and Facebook gaming. And through that process, I had seen, this was during kind of the Cityville, Farmville era. There's wall posts and notifications going out to all your friends to bug you to visit their farm. But within that, you have these viral engagement loops that get people back in. It's what built Cityville up to 100 million monthly active users, was these engagement loops and leveraging these platforms. So I took what I had learned from building those games and built it into a product for marketers. And we actually were able to build this original thing called Badgie. And it was a Twitter-based contest and gamification platform for sweepstakes. And we had a pilot, paid pilot with Quilted Northern. And we had this whole campaign around hashtags and taboos. But I'll rewind for a second. I actually validated the idea over a weekend. I sat down and I wrote a little bit of code connected up to the Twitter API, because again, software developer background. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to find people. People were still posting automatically to Twitter. They were posting their badges when they won a badge on Foursquare. And so I built this little bot that would see when somebody said hashtag badge, it would respond to them and say they had received a badge from Badgie. And if they retweeted it, they would get another badge. And so I set this little bot up and I walked away, went to the gym, came back, and I actually manually sent it to 100 people, just hit a button, sent it to 100 people, went to the gym, came back, and had over a 20% cold response rate of people who retweeted this account they'd never heard of to get another badge when the first badge was just a picture of a letter B. So there wasn't much to it. We were able to use that then with Quilted Northern, with a hashtag campaign around bathroom taboos. And so that was the start of that. We then went and raised some money. There's a whole story. You can go out and find it on the internet. I basically ran into Mark Cuban 2 days before the Super Bowl and had just finished a startup accelerator, pitched him on what we were doing, and he wanted to get involved. So we raised money from him, from some local angel investors and marketers, and tried to build the company or with that funding around that Badgie concept. And it really, it didn't quite catch for reasons that we didn't understand. There were a lot of contest platforms around that time, all of which raised a lot of money, some raised a little. Nobody really ran away with the prize and validated there was a market there. So I think there's a little bit of a trend of sometimes a big market just isn't there. That was also largely true with our Converge platform, which was an automated marketing dashboard for brands and agencies. And lots of people took a bite at an automated marketing reporting platform And none of them, there's plenty that are still rolling. You have your Ninja Cats, you have Clipfolio that's kind of running low price point, very hands-on. Ours was much more automated. So nothing really validated the space that we were trying to get in. So I think something I would take away is if there's a market category that's not thriving, there's probably not a lot of space to win either.
Yeah, that's interesting because in one sense, I've heard people say, it's good to have competition. Like, yeah. It, you know, you should be worried if you're in a niche and there's no competition. But I'm almost hearing you should probably see some competition that's they're doing well.
Like, yeah.
There should probably be some people that are doing well in this space. And that's maybe some good validation.
That sounds right. Yeah.
So what was the next iteration that kind of turned into Bellwood Labs?
Yeah, Bellwood Labs emerged from Converge. So Converge was actually a neat product that we were able to build in conjunction with Edelman, biggest, you know, kind of independent marketing agency in the world, I think, over $1 billion in revenue, not part of any of the networks. And we built that with them for Disney, for Samsung. We thought we were off to the races. We thought we had great market validation. And as we started to go sell that ourselves, where we didn't have these deep relationships with the brands, that's where we learned that was a little bit harder. And we had to then kind of go back to self-funding the company. So it wasn't sustaining on product revenue. And we had always kind of kept the possibility of doing a little bit of consulting work, helping other people build their products. And so we did a little bit of that. And we probably weren't very good at the process around that, the pricing of that, the organizing of that. But it was always kind of a funding mechanism for the software company. And what changed about 2.5 years ago was we at least asked the question of ourselves, what would happen if we quit saying no? If we stopped saying, hey, we don't have any more time to help you with your product. We're full. We're going to go back over here and keep building Converge, selling Converge, you know, pursuing that. And when we started saying yes, it helped me start to realize also what I had been trying to do with the software product. I was trying to build a product, a market, a go-to-market strategy, a sales engine, all of these things. And if it succeeded, I was going to get the chance to do what I had been good at my whole career, which is building the team to build and scale the software product. So what focusing into the consulting allowed us to do was to short circuit all of that. And we weren't fighting to do all these things. I am not going to build you the best sales team or the best marketing team. I don't think. Maybe someday it'll happen. So peeling those things away and allowing us to succeed on the merits of whether it's somebody small or we do some work with enterprise clients as well. We've done work with Warner Media. We've done work with S&P 500 companies building out government software that powers local governments, court systems and that sort of thing. So it's the consistent thread of building the trust, building the team that really simplifies the business and lets it thrive for me.
Yeah, that's really neat. I'm curious, as the owner, what excites you about it? For some owners, it's the actual work. It's the product. They really like the product that they're delivering. For some, it's the team. For some, it's the future aspect of what they're building. So what's exciting to you about leading and building Bellwood?
Yeah, I think it is. We will probably measure success in the number and size of successful software products that we're involved in. And it's unusual because I am very capable of sitting down and writing software, but I am a little bit unusual as a software developer. Most of my team, I talk to them about their goals. I said, where do you want to be in 3 years? They say, I still want to be writing code. For me, if it's the most helpful thing to do in a day, I'll write some code. But if I didn't write code for a year, I'm fine with that too. So it's really, I have to kind of dig in and find where that puts me, because that makes me very unusual that I can earn the trust of the technologist. I can earn the trust of the business, but I don't need to write code to feel engaged. And so what that lets me do is focus on how much of an impact we're having. And not to say that our clients couldn't find other partners that wouldn't do a good job, but a lot of times it doesn't happen. So I think we do have a great opportunity to be the company that has scaled to a point where we can help them succeed in building what they want to build. And the more products we can do that with, I think we're helping.
Yeah. Is this what you imagine? I mean, it looks different, but as far as like you growing your own business, kind of like being the CEO of business. Is it what you imagined it would be when you set out on this journey?
Well, no. I mean, we started off in an office, and now I'm in my basement. We started off with everybody in Atlanta, and now they're deployed across the country. Right. We started off with this dream of raising, you know, the things that people tell you. And I think that's been part of the process of building a business has been learning how to strip back the stories that people tell you of what you should be when you grow up and find out what is actually genuine to you. So when we raised one round of funding, sometimes that's almost irreversible. Sometimes when you start raising money, you either continue to succeed raising money or you fail and shut it down. Because we raised from a angel investor who sleeps very well at night, whether we're doing great or terrible, we have the opportunity to not keep raising money and the opportunity to be the best version of the business that we are. But getting ourselves off of that fundraising treadmill, as they call it, was really necessary to get where we are. And now we also get to build just whatever sort of business we want to build, which is pretty interesting because I didn't plan for a distributed team. But now we say, well, we have a distributed team. What are the advantages in recruiting? But how I'm a very interpersonal, relational person. And we bring people on board. We want them to be empathetic to clients. We want them to be engaged. So if we're not getting together ever, that probably creates a hole in their work life as well. So we started to explore that and we pulled out. Now we're doing, you know, two whole team retreats a year and two leadership team retreats a year. Cool. And we're going to keep iterating on it. I don't think we have it all figured out. And our whole team retreats are about to break. We've been able to get together in Airbnbs, but there gets to a point where, you know, there's not a 20 bedroom Airbnb that I know of that we're going to choose to rent out. It's probably pretty spendy. So we continue to iterate on what it is, but we kind of center around the truths that we do like to gather, that it's important. And it's also important, you know, folks will be coming into Atlanta in 2 weeks and we're going to visit some clients here. And people who visit clients, that's something I have a really strong conviction around. If you have a client of a sufficient size to justify it, go see them because there's a lot of people who aren't going to.
I think it's evident that there's several, you know, maybe unique things that you're doing even as your team goes, you know, going to remote and distributed workforce and different things like that. You also mentioned earlier that I can't remember the specific core value, but the fact that you mentioned core values makes me want to ask, like, what are some of the core values that are driving the work, and maybe speak into how some of those are practiced or applied within your work.
Absolutely. So those are a process we got to go through together on Zoom, is in developing those core values. And it has been interesting kind of exploring how we work through those. One thing we actually do in our monthly team meetings is kind of the intersection of being a very technical and kind of in some ways nerdy organization and core values is we actually do a demo. We have somebody who's working on a project go through and do a demo of what they've been working on, but then align it to the core values. So core values wise, we embrace your goals. Again, all of these core values kind of exist on a fractal level. They exist on me and my peers. They exist me to the rest of the company. They exist me to the client, right? So we embrace your goals. What are the goals of this client? What are they trying to accomplish? How do we understand that? Because we will build a better product if we know what that is. We own our commitments is a value. So it's not that you can't even always keep it. It's even when you can't keep the commitment, what do you do with it? How do you step up and own the miss on the commitment and what you're going to do next? So we talk about what commitment was made to the client. How have we owned that commitment in the scope of the engagement so far? We take the next step. So we talk about what is the next step for this product, for this client, you know, what are some of our commitments going forward? And then lastly, we succeed through empathy. So again, empathy, even for the personal context of the client, it's important, it matters, and it also helps us with each other because we all have situations where it's not just about the work.
Right. Yeah, and that's such a good practice. I've never heard anybody that does that of like, okay, show me what you're working on, but also talk about it in light of the core values. And I think that is really, really valuable. And unfortunately, a lot of businesses don't you know, they might have things that are important to them, but I think there's a difference between having these things that are important and actually having core values. And that's something I'm working through right now, is really figuring out, okay, I've had these principles that have been guiding my work for the last 7 years as an agency. However, are they actually core values that we're keeping ourselves accountable to? Are we actually checking up and looking at our work through that filter? So I think that's really significant. Where do you see this going? Even just more on a personal level, like, I think it's always interesting to hear from a business owner of, you know, like, why? Business owner, running a business is a different life than a lot of people, and everybody chooses to do it for different reasons. And so what's really that driving force and kind of the why behind why you're wanting to continue building at Bellwood?
Yeah, it's probably a bit cliche, but there was always a sense in my career working for other people that I was right on the edge of unemployable in the ways I wanted to kind of drive my own path. So some of it really was taking the turn off the road and driving my own path. But even that, I still almost waited for someone else to give me permission on that. The reason the genesis moment of the company was essentially I was working for a Facebook gaming studio and they shut the whole thing down. The Japanese parent company shut it down. They called us right before Memorial Day weekend. They said, don't come in on Tuesday. We're done here.
You're going to have a very, very long weekend.
This is a long weekend. Yes. So I kind of scrapped and said, well, gosh, I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. And I had one, my first daughter had already arrived. And so I started doing some consulting work, actually building a Facebook game for a TNT TV show called Falling Skies, which was pretty fun to do. It was a flash game because that was still a thing you could do back then. So it was certainly a little bit accidental. But then I did, I think because of the different companies I'd been involved in that had, some of them had done all right, but then they exited, and they exited in a way that the new situation wasn't going to be ideal. You know, it's like you can get a pretty good acquisition, but then, you know, one of them wanted us to go to Tel Aviv every month when they were bombing Tel Aviv all the time. So there's things you look at, you say, maybe I don't want to do that. So I did want to take my own run at building a company. So I think that was something that felt like unfinished business for me. If I had never started that, I think I would still be working for someone else and craving to take a swing at it. Mm-hmm. And I think what happened along the way is I realized a strength that had served me well out in the industry that also served well as a business. And something I realized, I was talking to my first boss out of school yesterday. I had lunch with him, hadn't seen him in a very long time. And he was reflecting that he's been building kind of CTO of different companies, different startups for a long time. He's thinking about getting out to the consulting world because that having 4 years to build a product, to fix a product, to build a team, to see if it's going to work, and sometimes it all falls apart. That was kind of some of my experience too. It was, I don't want the whole success of the business to be dependent on the sales team, the marketing team, picking the wrong market strategy at the wrong time. I have a pretty strong conviction that people are going to be building software products for a while. And what I actually see is even bigger companies are starting to think of their own internal IT initiatives as products and not as IT. There's a very, very large retailer who's been using a very, very expensive package from Manhattan Associates for a long time for their warehouse management. And they are now vertically integrating and they're building their own warehouse management system as a product. And when companies are stepping up and doing that level of project, I think there's a lot of opportunity to help those projects succeed, for us to build processes that help them succeed, to build hiring processes that help them succeed. And it's just more meaningful for me to touch that many projects that way than to try and pick one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. And I think the insight into that and knowing again, these convictions that are going to be driving your work. Yeah. And so it's like, you might as well not be totally in control, but be more in control of what that looks like and different things like that. You know, this has been really valuable. I love diving into this world of development and product. And there's so many things that we could talk about with it. As we bring this to a close, I'd love to kind of ask you, in your experience, where were some areas that you maybe got stuck? Because a lot of businesses, everybody has aspirations. You know, even in nowadays where everybody can see everybody else's business success, even more people have aspirations to be a business owner that maybe shouldn't be going down that path. But a lot of people get stuck at different points. So I'm curious to maybe one or two points where you got stuck or you ran into some challenges along your business journey that you had to overcome.
Yeah, I think I definitely got stuck by entering into a market that I did not understand well. So I came from a product background, and I always knew this when I was starting my business, is that some people, you go super deep and you've been at, let's say, Instagram, and then you know how to start another business kind of like Instagram. I was never close enough to the heart of any business, any software company that I was in, to say, I have an expertise in supply chain. I have an expertise in cybersecurity. And so I was always kind of jumping off a cliff saying, I know how to build stuff. And then diving into a market of marketing that I did not know. And so that isn't necessarily wrong. It just becomes a much longer learning process.
Yeah.
Of, okay, how does this work? How do people, who cares about what, you know, what are they going to buy? And so there was a lot of pain wrapped up in, you know, as a solo founder also. So I didn't have a partner in the business who said, oh, I know how this works. I have the keys to the kingdom. Here's the lay of the land. I think the other place probably, I mean, I got stuck plenty of places, but one of those that where I got stuck was needing some voices outside of myself to help, you know, people who are on my side, instead of going to someone for an investor for permission to raise money, going to an entrepreneurial accountability group where people want me to succeed, but they're not going to kiss my butt is good. And concurrently also, and I feel like I need a lot of help sometimes, also bringing in a coach who helped me see, he's, you know, he told me, when he looked at me, he's like, you're understaffed by two people. Stop it. And he's like, look at your results. He's like, here's the results. Okay. He's like, you can afford to hire two people. Your capacity is that you need to hire two people. Go hire two people. And so in the entrepreneurial accountability group, it's very, they don't tell you what you should do. And so having the balance of people who aren't going to tell you what you should do, but are going to share what they do with someone who has experience and is going to tell you when you're being a little stupid, I need both of those.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's huge. And I know for me, getting out of my own head and inviting some outside advice and input has been huge. So Rob, this has been really great. And it's, again, I love diving into this world. I'd love to kind of close this by just giving you an opportunity to tell our audience where they can find Bellwood, where they can find you, and also who should be finding you. Who's the ideal client or person that if they're listening, they should definitely reach out and get in touch.
Yeah, so you can find us at bellwood.io, just like it sounds, bellwood.io. I'm Rob at bellwood.io. If somebody wants to email, I'm also on LinkedIn, Twitter, and just about everything else. And the people that we really enjoy talking to on the smaller end, it can be a CEO, a founder, an investor who is engaged in a product that is either not going the right way or isn't started yet. And something that we do particularly with those clients is we actually give them a firm cost, and we have a process to get to a firm cost to build the product for them. And again, we have to own that commitment. And so that is something that really works in with that market. And then if someone's on kind of the larger company side, and most of the time they can't find enough talent to do all the work that they want to get done to build their own products. And so on the more enterprise side, that's typically kind of a VP, a director level, who knows the initiative that's needed, and their engineering manager feels like they were not doing their job if they ask for an outside help, but the VP director can say, no, this is important. I'm going to give you the outside help so we can get where we need to go.
Yeah.
Those are good folks for us.
Wonderful. Well, if any of you are them, please reach out to Rob. And again, that's bellwood.io. And then I also encourage our listeners, check out the Marketing Agency Leadership Podcast. If you have time and that sounds interesting to you, and we have links to both of those in the show notes below. Rob, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us on the Small Business Storytellers.
All right. Thanks, Seth. It's been fun.
Great. Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.